let's have a nice cup of TRE in the afternoon with Hannah Murray.
Good afternoon. Joining us on the line now is Tom Zeller Jr. He's co-founder and editor-in-chief of Undark, a non-profit digital magazine exploring the intersection of science and society. His first book, The Headache, The Science of a Most Confounding Affliction and the Search for Effective Relief, looks at the striking disconnect between how headaches are trivialized in everyday culture and the reality faced by 40% of the global population that lives with chronic head pain. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thanks for having me, Hannah. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you with us. And what a fascinating subject. I'm really intrigued by all the research you've done on this. And I presume that you're a headache sufferer yourself, are you?
Yes, it's not just casual curiosity. I do have a headache disorder myself. It's called cluster headache, which is rather rare. It's one of the three primary headache disorders. Migraine is probably the most familiar, or tension type headache, to your listeners.
So what are cluster headaches then?
Sure. Cluster headaches are, as I said, somewhat rare disorder. They're characterized by bouts of excruciating headaches that come on in repeated bouts throughout the day. They tend to be short-lived. They come on quickly. They're excruciatingly painful. Some of the scientific literature describe them as perhaps the worst pain known to human beings. Who can know for sure? But it's certainly, I can attest to the fact that it's incredibly painful. They come in clusters, which is how they get their name. They happen several times a day, even at night, for a month or two out of the year. And then in most cases tend to disappear for months, sometimes even years at a time, and then come back again. Rather unpredictably, there is some sense that maybe there's a rhythmicity to it, but it's not perfect. So that's sort of cluster headaches in a nutshell.
Gosh, how awful. And what do you do when you get them? I mean, is there medication that you can take that can dull the pain a bit?
Yeah, if you're lucky enough, you can get your hands on a class of drugs called the triptans. Sumatriptan is one of the most common. And for me, if I can, because cluster headaches come on so quickly and are so tend to last only an hour or two while they have you on the ground, a pill form doesn't really help because it takes too long to absorb. So you have to take it by injection. I can take that and it will stop an individual bout from happening, but it doesn't prevent the next one from coming on. So that is available, and you can't take these injections too often because it has implications for other, it has side effects that are somewhat nasty and also can lead to a cycle of repeated headaches. So it's not the perfect remedy, but I'm very happy to have it when I need it.
Yeah. And do you know why they happen? Why these headaches are brought on in certain people?
No one knows. And that was the sort of the interesting thing that I learned while researching the book, is that they remain rather mysterious. These headache disorders tend to, migraine is much more common than cluster headache, I should say. But they tend to stay present in the population in roughly the same percentage, year over year, decade over decade, century over century, even, that's such that we can tell from ancient texts. So, the idea that headache disorders are present in a large population of people is sort of established. Why that is and why it hasn't been sort of bred out of the species by now is a key question. We don't know why they happen.
That's really fascinating. And also how and why headaches are kind of trivialized quite a bit in everyday culture. Sometimes people use it as a flippant excuse when maybe they don't have a headache. You know, there's a standard joke about, you know, in the not being in the bedroom and the wife saying, "Oh, not tonight, I've got a headache, darling," you know, that kind of thing, as if it's just a bit of fun. But for people that are suffering on a regular basis, there's nothing funny about it, clearly.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the sort of cultural baggage that a lot of people with these disorders have to sort of deal with. I mean, not only as you describe, is it sort of understood as a vehicle for excuse making, for malingering. It's also a word that we use metaphorically in the culture to describe something that's a minor annoyance. You know, your taxes or a headache. Sitting in traffic is a headache. Mm. And yet we use the same word to describe a set of disorders that are truly neurological in nature. And so it's there's a linguistic thing happening there too, that is, and I think that dissonance has also been what has sort of slowed our scientific understanding, because it was not considered a very worthy thing to study or a very worthy thing to sort of dig into, despite the fact that you would inject billions of more dollars back into the economy if you could get half of these people out of bed.
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? I mean, you're saying through the research that you've done and according to the World Health Organization, about 40% of the global population suffer with some kind of headache disorder.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, probably some of them can muddle through with some over-the-counter medications and some combination of whatever it is that their doctors might give them. I mean, that's the other part of this, is there are very few drugs, and only recently as 2018, there were no drugs that were developed to treat these disorders. It was always a hand-me-down drug that had been designed for some other disorder that maybe helped with headache too, and that's what people would be prescribed. So I think some percentage of that 40% can probably carry on, but there is still, you know, substantial tens of millions of people whose lives, whole seasons of their lives, are upended by these things. And we really ought to be further along in understanding them than we are.
Yeah. And there's a real kind of lack of funding for doctors and scientists into headache disorders. Why would that be?
I think it's for the same reasons we're talking about. In some ways, a headache disorder is not considered a serious disorder. And so it may not be so for certain people, but for tens of millions of people, it really is. And I spoke to a lot of scientists who told me that when they were going through medical school and trying to decide on the disorder to which they were going to devote their career, and they expressed an interest in headache, they were told by their mentors, don't do it. It's a dead end. There's nothing you can do for these patients. It's not a big deal anyway. They're all very hysterical. Devote your career, your scientific career, to something more noble. And this was told to me by multiple scientists. So when you have that sort of built-in bias that permeates not just clinics, but also medical schools and even funding organizations like the U.S. National Institutes of Health, which provide most of the scientific funding for bench science in the U.S. and around the world, it doesn't augur well for a group of people with real central nervous system disorders that are looking for help.
Absolutely. It's shocking, really, isn't it? I mean, you think of the amount of research, and for good reason. I mean, I'm not saying these aren't things that should be looked into, for sure. But, you know, the likes of Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and heart disease and, you know, these kind of big killers that are out there, mm-hmm. that are horrible things to suffer from. You know, the fact that a lot of research and money is going on into these things, but not something like headaches, which, as you say, 40% of the population is suffering from it kind of doesn't make sense. It's not right, is it?
Well, I mean, I suppose if you were to take the counter argument, and this was said to me too, it's like, well, some of these disorders literally kill people. But there are other ways of looking at disorders, and if you added up all of the time that, say, a really chronic migraine sufferer experiences in bed, unable to work, unable to function, unable to talk, unable to participate in family life, unable to participate in the economy, unable to go to work. If you add up all those hours, they end up stretching over years. And these are years of lost productivity, years of lost healthy living. Mm. And that not only has a personal cost, it has an economic cost to all of us. You know, there is an argument to be made that, yes, well, you know, a headache, no one is going to likely die from a headache, although suicide rates do tend to be higher among.
I was going to ask you about suicide, actually. Yeah. That must be a factor.
It is a factor. It's a matter of elevated risk, but it's certainly true that migraine sufferers and cluster sufferers have an elevated risk of suicidality. That's easily established in most of the research. And no wonder, when your life is being ground down by cycles of pain, the thought certainly is going to cross some people's minds. So there's that too. But again, even short of that, it seems to me that, if you're trying to make the most effective use of your research dollar, that a little bit more could go to a disorder that ought to be discoverable. I mean, it's certainly there's something going on in the central nervous system, and we're getting closer to understanding it. But there's something going on there that is discoverable if we only bother to look.
Yeah. Is there any signs of it being genetic headache issues?
There is a strong genetic signal in migraine, less so in cluster headache. And it's not perfect, of course. I mean, there's no guarantee that if you're, say, your grandmother had migraine, you will as well. But there is an elevated element of hereditary aspects to migraine. Definitely true. But it's hard to pin down because it appears there have been genetic studies, and it appears that there are lots of different genes. There's like a whole kaleidoscope of genes that are involved in some way, a complex combination that makes someone prone to migraine. And so it's very hard to sort of pinpoint, this is the gene that is tied to headache. And if we just tweak that, with CRISPR tools in the modern age, we can cure migraine. It's not going to be apparently as simple as that.
Yeah. And with the research that you've done and now the book that you've produced, are there not people that you can send it to kind of say, listen, read this, something needs to happen, something needs to change? Do you think what you've done could hopefully make a difference into more research being done?
Well, I don't know. One can always hope. I do think that it's stirring a conversation that I think is a lot of people with these disorders have been just desperate to have culturally for a long time. And so if that conversation starts happening, I think that that's a great thing. Whether that will result in more money being spent, I don't know. There's a lot of things going on in the world today, so hard to predict. But I'm certainly gratified that people are finding the book. And, I had one patient tell me if it doesn't make a difference, at the very least, she can clunk her doctor over the head with it.
Exactly. So, yes, definitely. Yeah. Well, it's good that it's being talked about. Well done for writing the book. And if people want to get a copy, it's called The Headache, and it's available on our website, tre.radio. It's by Tom Zeller Jr., who we've been chatting with today. Tom, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. It was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Thank you.